Okay, we'll be in chapter 51. Let's break it down now. Excuse me. Hearken to me. Hearken. You know what that word is?
Shama.
Means to hear with hear intelligently with the intent to respond positively to what you hear. He says, hearken to me, listen to me, you that follow after righteousness. Is he talking to everybody?
He's talking to the ones that have the ears to hear.
He's talking to first fruit. He's talking to the ones that have the ears to hear. The ones that he has created the ability to hear. You that seek the Lord, look to the rock. Who's the rock?
Christ.
1 Corinthians 11 says, Christ was that rock that followed him through the desert. It says, whence you are hewn, and to the hole of the pit, and literally the quarry from whence you are digged. Now, he's not really talking about a quarry in the ground, is he? Where did we come from?
The Christ.
From the Christ. We were taken out of the Christ. Now, he has a parable coming up, okay? He says, look. Well, this word here doesn't just mean turn your head and look at something. It means look intently. To look intently to Abraham your father and to Sarah that bare you. What's he talking about? He's talking about what he just said in that first verse. Where'd you come from? Who bare you? Who brought you out? Right. Your source comes from God, the rock. He said, look unto Abraham your father and to Sarah that bare you, because I called him alone and blessed him and increased him. It wasn't by what Abraham did, because Abraham disobeyed God, did he not? He disobeyed God, but yet God chose to bless him. What do you think that's all about?
Same way I am.
He's exactly talking about you and I in our lives, saying, you know, if I chose you, I don't care what you do, I'm going to get out of you what I want out of you. Right? Whatever God wants for your life, he's going to get it. And sooner or later, you'll be like Jonah. You'll turn around and come back. You won't like that ride you got inside the fish. Be better in Nineveh. Verse 3 goes on and says, because the Lord shall comfort Zion. Did he say Ophel, Moriah, and Zion? He said Zion. Talking about the first fruit here. He will comfort all the her waste places, and he will make her wilderness like Eden. What's he talking about? Their minds. He's going to restore their minds. Go back to where we were in Eden. Does that same? It's a symbol. We're going to back the way we were with God before the foundation of the world. What did he say in Job? He said, Job, weren't you there when the morning stars sung together?
Amen.
See, weren't you there? See, we were with him before the foundation of the world, and he sent us on this journey. And now we've got to come back. That circular path, like in 23rd Psalm. And he says, like the garden of the Lord, joy and gladness, and that word gladness should be praise. Joy and praise shall be found therein. In what? In the mind of Christ. Where's the mind of Christ? In us. But it'll be found in the mind of Christ. Joy and praise will be found there in us. Thanksgiving and the voice of melody. Now the word voice of melody really doesn't, it should say, and the sound of music. It doesn't really say voice of melody. It says the sound of music. So he says, hearken to me, my people. Who's his people? Yes, first fruit. But you're not your own. You were bought with a price. Who'd he buy?
All.
He bought all. But right now he's talking to first fruit. He's not talking to everybody. He hasn't given them the ability to hear yet. He's not holding them accountable for anything. I'm going to leave off. He said, hearken to me, my people, and give ear, or listen to me, my nation, because a law shall proceed from me, and I will make my judgment. And what is judgment? I want you to see something here. This is not talking about somebody making a decision, yay or nay. What happened on the cross? Judgment was given to the world, wasn't it? Christ was the judgment. You know, this is Christ. His judgment He said, and I will make my judgment to rest for a light. And didn't Jesus say, I am the light? It was the Christ in Him talking. I am the light that came down from above that lights every man that comes into the world. Okay. So this is talking about Christ. To be a light to His people. Okay. The only light we have is the Christ within us. The only illumination is Him. Like Paul said, it's not I that lives, but the Christ that lives within me. And just as Paul said it, that's the words coming out of us. My righteousness is near. My not salvation, but my deliverance is gone forth. That means it's already happened, doesn't it? It's already gone. And my arms, or my strength, okay, shall judge. And the word judge here is not correct. It doesn't say judge. It said, and my arms shall vindicate. Vindicate. Makes a big difference, don't it? Vindicate means He's going to make you in right standing. He's going to set you free. He's going to say what you did wasn't you. It wasn't your fault. You're innocent. Didn't Jesus say on the cross, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do? That's the vindication. Now these arms He was talking about, my arms shall vindicate you. Do you think He's really talking about natural arms?
Strength.
What is God's strength? What's the greatest strength God has?
Love.
It's love. That's exactly what it is. His love will carry you, won't it? His love carries the whole world. So His strength, which we see a lot of times as the natural arm, but His strength is love. What drew us to Him?
His love.
His love. It wasn't anything we did, was it? We didn't ask for anything. We didn't even know what was going on. He just came and got us when He was ready. He said, and the isles, or the isolated ones, will wait upon me. And my arms, or my love, shall they trust. What's Isaiah? What did Isaiah say in 40:31? They that wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. They will mount up the wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. And they'll walk and not faint. Okay. But see, we're trusting in Him. They that wait upon the Lord. And He's telling you, the isolated ones. Who do you think the isolated ones are? That's first fruit. You know, you're isolated from your man. You can be in a crowd of 1,000 people and be isolated wherever you're at. That's just the way it is. It's okay. Especially if those happen to be church folk. You can really be isolated. Verse 6. Lift up your eyes to the heavens, or to the sky is what it should say, and look upon the earth beneath, because the sky shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall what? Wear out, not wax old, but wear out like a garment. And they that dwell therein, in the earth, shall die in like manner. Everything in the earth dies. It's a death realm, isn't it? But my salvation, or my deliverance, shall be what? Forever. The word is olam. Literally, it's meaning it's continuous. Just like we were talking about the circular motion about everything going on earlier this morning. When it says in the Gospels, Jesus said, he shall come, as the lightning comes from the east and goes to the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. How does this lightning don't come from the east to west? The light is the S-U-N, which is the S-O-N in symbol. And how does it come? Continuous. It's always on the move, isn't it? Just because we can't see it don't mean it's not moving. Okay. We want to tend to think that that's that idolatry in our mind, thinking that our view is the only view there is.
Actually, it's the earth moving.
Moving, yeah.
Us.
Going back to Him. Mm-hmm. But it's always on the move. It's a continual process. Never stopping. Okay, where do I leave off here?
Forever.
Yeah, forever, okay. Into the ages continuously. And my righteousness shall not be abolished. Nothing's going to change God, is it? He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. If God is love, how can He do any of the things that the church says He's going to do to His people?
I think you skipped part of that verse there.
What did I skip?
I missed it.
What? Tell me.
Part of that verse.
Which one, honey? Tell
Six.
Me. Tell me what I missed.
I was like, when he's talking about the wax, don't like a garment.
Yes.
Okay. awesome.
You was in another realm. It's okay. It's all right.
Pardon.
It's all right. Verse 7. Hearken, Shama. Hearken to me. Listen intently with the intent to respond positively. You that know righteousness. What is righteousness? God's righteousness is what?
His peace.
Christ. Christ is the righteousness of God. That's what the book says. Christ is the righteousness of God. The people in whose heart or mind is my law. Now the word here for law is Torah. And it literally means instructions or directions. So he says, listen to me, you that know Christ. The people in whose mind is instructions and directions. See, he wrote in our heart before the foundation of the world, didn't he? He left instructions in us, and now he is revealing them as we get closer and closer to our intended destination. We see clearer and clearer, don't we? That's just a process. And as we get closer to that destination, it becomes clearer and clearer. That's all there is to it. And that's who he's talking to right now, first fruit. Fear ye not the reproach of men. This word men right here speaks of mortal man. Don't fear the natural man. Neither be afraid of their what? The word revilings here speaks of abusive language or insulting language. What'd you say, Lisa? Insult, yeah. Insulting language or abusive language. That's what the language actually means for that word revilings. He said, and you know, if you're speaking truth, what's going to happen?
You're going to be insulted.
Jesus was insulted constantly, wasn't he? There was abusive language used against him. All manner of evil shall be said about you, right? And it's not because of you, but it's what's in you.
Is that external or internal?
Yeah. Yeah. You could be insulting yourself. You never know. Okay, verse 8 says, because the moth shall eat them like a garment. The moth shall eat who like a garment? The ones that's mistreating you. Now, we see the moth as this little tiny insect, little type of a butterfly-like thing, that's just so cute and harmless. But that's the very thing that slips in and destroys. There's nothing about a moth that isn't destructive, is there? They destroy everything to get around, don't they?
Isn't it like the young foxes that eat the vines?
Get the vines, yeah, the tender vines. And it says, and the worm, okay? This worm is the same thing as that moth up there, okay? It shall eat them like wool. But my righteousness shall be olam, into the ages, you know, continuous. And my deliverance from generation to generation. He said, you don't have to worry about me. I'm here. I'm here to stay. Don't worry what they say. Well, it ain't going to last. Or don't worry about it. It's here. They're not going to change it. Verse 9. Here we go into something good. It's all good, but there's some more. Better stuff sometimes. Awake, awake, put on strength, O armor of the Lord. Now he's calling you what?
The armor of the Lord.
The arm of the Lord. What did we say the arm of the Lord was?
Love.
Hello, love. The British was ahead of us on that, wasn't they? Hello, love. The Australians and the British. Awake as in the ancient days. He's saying, hey, go back to what you were from in the ancient days when you were with him. When you were with him before the foundations of the world. When the morning stars sung together. That's our destination. Going back to him. Way back then, we're circling back around.
It's the Genesis mind.
It's the Genesis mind, the Genesis face. In the generations of old, are you not what? What's that word? Are you not what?
It.
Hey, no. The word is not it. God is not an it. And you being part of God is not an it. It is him or he. Yeah, but are you not he that has cut the dirt, that Rahab? Okay, are you not he that cut Rahab and wounded the dragon? Now this brought a revelation to me. As soon as I read this verse, I immediately thought of Revelation 13. Verse 14. I'm going to go there and read it. I'm going to share with you a revelation that God gave me.
Red dragon.
No, that's a different one.
Okay.
Revelation 13, 14. And it says here, well, early in the chapter it says, I saw one of the beast's heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. But that's not what I'm talking about. We want to go on to something else. In verse 14. It says, and deceived them that dwell on the earth by means of those miracles which he had power or the authority to do in the sight or in the... What's your sight?
Your vision.
Your images that you get, right? In the image you have, there's power and authority. Okay?
Right.
So now, look at this. In the sight or the image of the beast. That's what it is. The sight of the beast or the image of the beast. When you look at the beast, you get a what?
Yeah.
An image of that beast. Now, saying to them that dwell where?
In the earth.
That they should make an image, right? And that means it's not real.
Yeah.
Image is not the real thing, is it?
No.
But it's what we think. We try to make images reality, don't we, in our minds? Make an image to the beast, okay, or of the beast, which had the wound by a sword. That's the reality. Guess what? When God said in Genesis 2, if you do this, you shall surely die if you eat of that tree. That's the word of God, the sword of God, which brought the wound in the head of Adam. And yet did live. Correct? Now, what did Jesus do on the cross? And Lois, I don't want you to speak because you know it.
Yeah.
What did Jesus actually accomplish on the cross? He slayed that dragon. He did away with the devil, the sin, all these things. But what did he really do? And the key is right there in that verse. That they should make an image. He destroyed the image of the beast. He showed you a picture of something that was not a beast nature. He showed you the nature of God in him dying on that cross. No greater thing can a man do than lay down his life for his friends. Right? He showed you that the image that we have is incorrect. And what he did on the cross was he destroyed the image of that beast. Does the book not say that he is the last Adam? Then we're not Adams, are we?
Never have been.
We're Christ's. We have thought we were Adams because we've been told we were Adams. And the church tells you you're Adams. But he says, no, 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 no. I showed you. I gave you a picture. I gave you an image of the true nature of God, who you are. You're sons of God. You're just like your papa. Ain't that right? So he gave us a picture of the reality of everything. Not the image, not the imaginations of it. But he gave us a true picture of who we are. We should look at that and say, I'm willing to accept who I am. Not what my mind tells me, but what God tells me. Not what the church tells me, but what God tells me. And God says, you are in my image. You were created in Genesis in the image of God. Were we not? So why aren't we living that way? Because truly we believe the other side. We believe the image that our eyes tell us versus what the Spirit of God is showing us. It's doubt and unbelief. But see, he showed you once and for all. He gave you the correct image of the love of God, which you are. That we're willing to die for someone else. That's the true picture of love. I saw that and it blew me away. The actual image of what he did. And there is no more image of the beast. Beast is just, it's just an image. I know it's not reality. So what I see people doing, acting like the beast nature, I know it's not real. It's not who they are. And Jesus had the ability to look beyond that and say, Father, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. They're acting out of a nature that's not theirs. They're acting out of that false image.
Why ask them, where are you, Adam?
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to hear the response.
Yep.
The response showed God that Adam believed.
He believed the image that he saw instead of who he said he was. Hmm. That's powerful to me.
He had eyes, but he couldn't see.
He had eyes to see and ears and couldn't hear.
Mm-hmm. He was a little narcissistic.
Yeah. Narcissistic. He was narcissistic, that's for sure. Okay. I'm still in 9, wasn't I? Are you not he that has cut Rahab? Rahab speaks of the boaster, speaks of Egypt. That's the carnal man. Egypt's the world, the natural man, okay? And wounded the dragon. Then he says in verse 10, are you not it again? No, it's him. Are you not he or him which has dried the sea? Who dried up the sea?
God.
That's just a symbol in the Red Sea when he dried it up and they walked across. That's just a symbol. What he's talking about in reality, who dried up the sea? What is the sea?
Multitudes.
Multitudes of all the nations of peoples, right? Who dried them up? Who removed them from the Word of God?
He did. They were merely dust.
We were just dust, correct? So he dried it up. He says, of the sea, the waters of the great deep, which is humanity, that has made the depths of humanity a way or a course of life for the ransom to cross back over. See, God dried it up so they had a way to get back to Him. He prepared a way. That's all it is. He has all these symbolic meanings in these words. He's telling you the same story. Hey, I created you and I realized I had to dry you up so you could come back.
And He breathed life into them.
In Jeremiah, he said, everything that I plant, I will pluck up so that I can restore it. Okay. So it's not your will, but His will that'll be done. It's not your power that gets you there. He says, not by power nor by might, but by my Spirit. See, that's the way it's going to happen. It has nothing to do with what we do. It's all about what He did. And He's already done it. He's already set it in motion. Therefore, verse 11, the redeemed of the Lord shall return. Now, do you see any options in that? God said, the redeemed of the Lord shall return. Well, tell me how you're going to get out of that one. I don't see no options in here.
Of course, what doctrine
you're in. Yeah. And come with singing or shouts of joy to Zion. The redeemed, that's first fruit. They're going to come. There's no option if God calls you. Just like Jonah. Did he have an option? He got to take a little cruise, but he didn't like it. Decided it'd be better to go where God asked him, didn't he? Same with everybody else. And everlasting joy upon their heads. That's the minds. They shall obtain, or literally take hold of, means you're going to realize and understand something, doesn't it? You're going to take hold of gladness and joy, and sorrow and mourning shall flee away. When you understand who's in control of everything, why would there be emotions of sadness and sorrow and grief? Tell me, someone tell me. If you're not in control of it, why is there sadness and sorrow and grief in our lives? I can't control it, can I? So why should I be upset? God's doing what He wants done. It's accomplishing what He wants. So why should I be upset? Sure, there's things that don't feel good, but it's not going to take me off my course. I'm going to accomplish what I was sent here to do, regardless. I can't even mess it up. That's pretty good. Verse 12, it says, I am He that comforts you. Who are you that you should be afraid of humanity or humankind? Not just man, but humankind that shall die. Why you be afraid of another person that's going to die just like you? Why are you afraid of them for? God has not given you a spirit of fear, but power, love, and a sound mind. And of the son of Adam, the sons of Adam, which is made as grass. He said, they're all frail. Why are you worried about them?
They're all imaginations.
Well, they're reality in this realm, but that's all they are. And they're going to pass away. All flesh is grass, right? It's just temporary. What are you worried about them for? And if God chooses to take you home, to die is gain? So to die is, what do you say? To live is Christ, to die is gain.
Yeah.
To live is Christ, to die is gain. So what's the big deal? Everybody's afraid of dying in the natural. All we're doing is going back in that circle, back to where we started, to our Father. So why are we focusing on that? You got no choice in that matter, do you? God didn't say, where do you want to rest for eternity? He said, you're going back where I started you from. No option in this thing. When you come to that understanding and just let it go, you'll come to peace in your life. Won't have any struggles. Okay, and verse 13 goes right along with verse 12. It's still talking the same people. And you forget the Lord your Maker, and have stretched, that has stretched forth the heavens or the skies, and laid the foundation of the earth, and you have feared continually every day, what? Because of the presence of the fury of the oppressor. Because of the thought or the accusation or the threat of fear. Just the threat of fear has got people scared to death today, doesn't it?
Yeah.
People are still living after 9/11, the anniversary, which was the day they're going to have big celebrations about. Why do you want to remember all that horrible stuff for?
Yeah.
We don't live 10 years ago. We live right now. And we're living in a threat. Our country is being crippled by the fear that we're under. We shouldn't be. As if it were ready to destroy. And where is the fury of the oppressor? God said, where's the fury of the oppressor? It's in His hand. He can do what He wants to with it. It can't happen if God doesn't let it happen.
He told us earlier that it was in our arm.
Yeah, we're His arm.
Right, so we can get rid of it.
Yep, and it isn't going to be by firing bullets and rockets and bombs. That'll never get rid of it. The captive exile hastens that he may be loosed. Why? For fear of dying, right? What does Philippians 4, 6, and 7 say?
Be anxious for nothing.
Be anxious for nothing. Why are they hastening to get free from something, from the enemy? Okay. You know, if God put you in the, like He put Egypt in to Pharaoh, in captivity to Pharaoh, right, in the world, He didn't take them out right away, did He? They stayed there for 400 years. 400 years. And everybody's in a hurry today, aren't they? Well, there's a purpose for being in captivity, isn't there? There's a purpose for it. Quit trying to fight it. When God's ready to bring you out, He'll bring you out and nothing can stop it. But you can't bring yourself out. All you can do is let God have His way. Don't fight with Him. Correct. Don't wrestle with Him.
Maybe correcting your mind.
Well, there's no babies about it. He's correcting your mind. No babies in that one. That's right. And that he should not die in the pit. Nor that his bread should fail. See, they're all worried about the natural thing, dying and eating. That's the beast, isn't it?
That's all everybody worried about.
That's all they're worried about. I don't want to die and I want to have plenty to eat. You know, well, God's our sufficiency. He'll take care of what we need. We don't have to worry about those things. If we take care of what God has given us to do. Remember what I asked you a while ago before we started recording this? I said, if we are servants, what do servants do?
Serve.
They serve. And whose responsibility is it to take care of the servant?
God.
The master. It's his responsibility to feed and clothe and give me security. Isn't it? So I don't have to think about them. So if I take my energy and focus on doing the mission that he has given me to do, I don't have to worry about that other stuff. I can accomplish something because I'm not wasting all my time and my energy and my thought processes on something that's none of my business anyway. That's his business. That's his job to take care of that end of it. I'm just to do what I'm told. I used the example years ago about if I was going to feed 100 people today in this room, and I said, I'll be back in a little while, and I asked somebody, would you go in there and wash the dishes and make sure they're all clean? And when I come back, the dishes are still piled up all over the kitchen, and the people have got the floor shined up, waxed, buff, man, I mean, looks spotless. And I said, what'd you do? They said, look at the floor. We got it clean. Man, it's really nice. It really needed clean. I said, yeah, but that's not what I asked you to do. I asked you to make the dishes, and now we got 100 people that can't eat. You didn't do what you were asked. You volunteered something that I wasn't. I'm not concerned about the floor. I want people to have food to eat. Okay? So the main thing to do is hear what you're told to do and accomplish it. Hear intelligently with the intent to respond positively to what you hear.
Obey.
Just obey it. Comes out of that same word, shaman. Verse 15. But I am the Lord your God. Okay? That's Yahweh Elohim. That divided the sea. In Genesis 1 and 10, he separated the land from the water. Right? Whose waves roared, and the Lord of hosts is his name. And I have put my words in your mouth. See there? Do you have to worry about what you got to say? I mean, it's our responsibility to understand some things, do some studying, some reading, research. But when it comes time, you can just step back, like you said earlier, Teddy, and they just flow out. Sometimes you sit back and amaze yourself the things that come out of your mouth.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. I'm amazed by the things that come out of my mouth. I'm saying, I didn't think I knew that stuff, but it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
It just comes out because it's there. Yeah, and I have covered you in the shadow of my hand, that I may plant the heavens and lay the foundation of the earth and say to Zion, you are my people. There's three things there. Did you get that? Three things. He said, I have put my words in your mouth and I have covered you with the shadow of my hand. With God's works, he said he's covered you. His hand represents his works. And here's the three things he said. That I, and cross out the words may, the word may there shouldn't be there, that I plant the heavens. That's his first goal, to plant the heavens, first fruit. You got that? First fruit. And lay the foundations of the earth. There's your Pentecostal experience. They planted the heavens. I guess the planting of the heavens, I said that wrong, should be the first realm. The foundation of the earth would be the Pentecostal realm. And say unto Zion, you are my people. Who did he leave out?
Nobody.
He covered all three realms. Verse 17 says, awake, awake. Why does he keep saying awake for?
Because you've been asleep.
Because we've been asleep. We've been walking around in a slumber like a zombie. We have no idea what the reality is. We've been listening to religion who has guided us, or I should say misguided us, throughout the ages. But if we listen to the Spirit of God, it's going to be okay. He says, wake up, wake. He said, wake up, wake up. Stand up, Jerusalem, which has drunk at the hand of the Lord the cup of his fury. Who gave it to him? Well, the church tells him the devil did all that. But God says, no, you drank it from my hand. You have drunken the dregs of the cup of trembling and drained them out. He said, you've drunk up every bit of it. Took it all. There is none to guide her among all the sons whom she has brought forth. Now, there's a word here that's misrepresentative, which says there is none to guide her. That word, her, is wrong. It should be the word, therefore. There is none to guide, therefore, among all the sons. Why? Because they've drunk of the trembling, the cup of the fury of the Lord. There's none of them to guide anybody because they're drinking the wrong thing.
They're reaping what they sow.
That's exactly right, but they're taking the wrong thing. See, they're living in condemnation and guilt. And the next three words, whom she has brought up, it should say, I'm going to read the way it should say, there is none to guide, therefore, among all... No, the word even among even should be there. I'm sorry. There is none to guide there. Therefore, all the sons brought forth. That's what it should say that way. Neither is there any that has taken the hand of all the sons brought up. That's all it should say. There's all kinds of added words in there that the interpreters just added in. And it takes you away from what it should say. Now, I'll read it once again, the whole verse, the way it should go. There is none to guide, therefore, all the sons brought forth. Neither is there any that takes the hand of all the sons brought up. That's the way it should say it.
There's only one way to be led.
By his hand. Verse 19 goes on and says, these two things are come to you. Who shall be sorry for you? Desolation and destruction and the famine and the sword. So desolation, destruction, and the famine and the sword. By whom shall I comfort you? How can I comfort you with all that? That's a pretty good question, isn't it? When you've got desolation, destruction, famine, and the sword, he said, by whom shall I comfort you?
Because you're trusting in all the other stuff.
You're trusting in the wrong things. I can't. You're concerned about your testings instead of what I'm telling you. You're looking at the situation and not in the reality of what I'm telling you. Your sons have fainted. They lie at the head of the streets as a wild bull in a net. They're trapped. They are full of fury of the Lord, the rebuke of your God. Okay? Therefore, hear now this, you afflicted and drunken. Now, this word afflicted is kind of neat. It means afflicted in mind and circumstances. Does that sound where everybody is today? It's where they've always been. It's always been an internal thing, and they're always trying to make it an external thing. The affliction is not about having some kind of disease in our flesh or having a broken bones or something like that. It's about the affliction of our minds. If we understand that, and he says, you're afflicted and drunken, but not with wine. You know how many people is drunk today on 911? You turn your TV on today, and I guarantee it, there will be hundreds of thousands of people up there drunk with sorrow and grief about 911 10 years ago. They've never healed.
Is that kind of like, what is that in Revelation where it's talking about Thyatira, that odor of affliction?
Mm-hmm.
The people is looking to be miserable. And
that's all they want.
Pessimistic and
that's the way the natural man wants. They want to live in that past of suffering and grief.
Drama.
And yeah, like we call it today, drama. Everybody loves the drama, and everybody wants drama. You know, I don't like it. I don't like to be around all that drama. But they were not drunk with wine, he said. They're drunk with that. And let's look at it in another aspect. Look at all the things people are obsessed with. Addiction is not just drugs and alcohol, like most people think. People are addicted to so many things. Look at sports. You think people are addicted to sports?
Yes.
I guarantee you, yesterday there was 103,000 people in that Ohio Stadium up there. Every football stadium around the country today is full, all the professional stadiums. They're all filled up with people. They're just addicted. They got to have it. People who can't pay their bills, but they got these giant screen TVs with satellites and NFL. I mean, I like to watch a football game once in a while, but I'm not addicted to it. But that's it. So what?
Addicted to gasoline, they're addicted to
everything.
Yeah.
You know, everything that you can think of, they get addicted to it. They can't take it in moderation, go on and say be happy that I have all the things I need. They never get enough, do they? They are afflicted in the mind, I guarantee you. That's a mind issue. Verse 22. Thus saith the Lord and your God, that pleads, or literally, he doesn't plead. Let me get this again, get it right. He defends, not the cause, but he just defends his people, is what I should say. And your God that defends his people, not the cause of his people, but the people. Because I have taken out of your hand, oh, this is a good one. I have taken out of your hand the cup of trembling. Hey, we ain't got it no more. He said, I took it out of your hand. When are you going to believe it? I don't have to do that, no deal with that no more. He said, I take it out of your hand. The dregs of the cup of my fury, you shall no more drink it again. That ought to make you just shout. You don't have to deal with that no more. That's what happened on that cross when he reversed that image of that beast. You no longer have to drink that anymore. Man, that's good stuff. But I will put it into the hand of them that afflict you. Now I feel sorry for them.
It's kind of like that the devil departed for a season.
Mm-hmm.
The cup's still there if you want to drink of it.
But he said, I'm putting it in the hand of the ones that afflict you. That's religious folk, people that live on the earth. Which have said to your soul, bow down that we may go over. And you have laid your body as the ground and as the streets to them that went over. We're not just talking about when they walked across the Red Sea. We're talking about humility or the lack of humility here. where they have taken people and used people. And religion today is a user of people, just like governments and everything else is. People don't mean anything. It's about money. And they take people in their arrogance and they use them. And that's what he's calling about, laying your body down as a ground that they can walk on you. Isn't that happening today? All over the world. People that are truly seeking God are being mistreated. Wherever they're at, in whatever realm they're at, they're being mistreated. And these people think they're greater than they are. And God's no respecter of people, is He? No respecter of any person. And they think they're superior to someone else. That's probably the one thing that I still have to deal with is arrogance of people who think they're superior to someone else. I don't like it. And it's probably the biggest thorn that I have to deal with right now in my life is people that are so arrogant and they think they're superior to everybody else. And I mean, I truly do not like to be around them. I mean, that's just straight up. I don't. And I don't care which preacher it is or what denomination it is. And it comes out of church, more so than worldly people.
Well,
it's church people.
Isn't what we were speaking of earlier about dealing with being in the face of religion?
Mm-hmm. And that's probably the worst thing that I deal with. I mean, I know I can't do anything about it. I can't deal with them. And like in earlier days, Lois would say, I'd take a machete and just cut their head off, you know. And I understand the feelings, but I can't go. That's the one thing that really, really irritates me, that I see someone disrespect someone and act so superior to someone else. It's just sickening to me. You know, I don't like it, period. As you can say, I'm searching for all the words, adjectives to try to describe how horrible it is to me. But I can't probably do it justice. It's nasty.
The Lord has taken
it
out of your
hands. Mm-hmm. He did. But in my mind, I still see these people mistreat people, and it's disgusting.
Right.
It's disgusting to me that someone can think that they're better than someone else. So, you know, people have all these false images of what we should be, you know. And they don't know how to judge anyone by who they are, and they judge them by that false image. They look at you and judge it. Which one of us sitting in this room hasn't been falsely judged by the image we portray of who we are?
Or vice versa.
Yeah. Well, we've done others, but we shouldn't, and we should be the place now. We should stop judging others, but I'm saying there's ones that don't know what we're talking about, or they don't know the level that we're talking in, and so I understand them treating us that way, but we shouldn't be treating them that way. And I say, you know, I try to be respectful even to the people that make me sick with their religion. They're just nauseating. I still try to be respectful in every way I can to them. But it's really tough. It's the one I got to deal with. So, anyway, did I finish that? No. Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, he's going to put it into the hand of them. That's the same as they.
Wouldn't that be in the beginning of verse 23? It'd be like, touch not my anointed
to do my prophets no harm.